Welcome into season two of the Ordinary Christians podcast. It's so great to be with you. It's been quite some time since the last time we were able to drop a podcast. The reason for that is that with some of the world that coronavirus created, things get very, very busy, especially for experienced pastors like Bob and Ron, who have so much going on, so much to do. And so it's really, really good to be able to be back with you. This last year that we've experienced in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic has been one of some extraordinary division and seems to be a year of extraordinary social and societal change. And some of that has been centered on what has happened in Minnesota and Minneapolis related to George Floyd. We're recording this just a little bit after the guilty, guilty, guilty verdict for the officer in that altercation. And we figured that it was time for us to reflect about that and think about this in a way that might help ordinary Christians. And so what I want to do at the outset of this podcast here is to turn things over to Ron, because I know that Ron has done a bunch of reading and research specifically about the justice system. And Ron, I'd love for you to kick us off by talking about that. Would that be all right with you?
Yeah, sure. Great to be with you guys. Good to have you. Good to see you, Derek. You look wonderful via Zoom.
Thanks very much, man. I started running during coronavirus.
Gosh.
Where are you running from?
running from the pain of division.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we start, I'm Derek Buchum. Ron Sitlau is here. Bob Bauer is here. And Ron is going to kick us off by talking a little bit about what it is that he has learned.
I have a really good friend who is an African-American woman who I was talking to after George Floyd was murdered. And she was talking about her young adult son, whom every time he goes out, she's afraid for him. And that obviously is very true. And her fear is palpable. Like, I felt it. And so I wanted to learn, what's going on? What's the reality behind the fear? What are we doing? What are we not doing?
Yeah.
And you know what I found was pretty dramatic stuff. In 1986, the United States passed a drug law that raised the criminal penalties for drug use and drug trafficking. Whites and blacks use drugs about the same. Whites actually sell more drugs than blacks. But if people who are in prison for drug crimes, 80% of them are either black or Hispanic. And so what you have is this huge disparity between what is happening in society and what is happening in our jail and prison system. So,
Ron, can I ask a clarifying question? Can I ask a clarifying question about all of this? So when you say that whites and blacks use drugs at the same rates and whites sell it more often, is that percentage-wise or in terms of gross numbers? Because I know that African-Americans make so the same percentage of white Americans and black Americans use drugs, a larger percentage, you're saying, of white Americans sell drugs.
Yep.
And despite that, there is a vast inequity in terms of who's in prison. Now, that's particularly striking given that white Americans are the majority of Americans. So it's not like of among 50-50, there are 80% of African Americans and Hispanics in prison. It's among, 65% of the country being American and 30% being black and Hispanic. 80% of those who are in prison for this are black and Hispanic.
Right.
Okay.
And so, you know, what you see is a system. It's not the police's fault. It's not any particular family's fault. We have built a system that has either intentionally or unintentionally targeted black male. So, you know, if you're a poor black male, you get into the justice system, you cannot afford an attorney. And that almost guarantees you a harsher sentencing. Most whites that enter into the system have some kind of means to be able to get into a rehab program. And So the research, what is amazing is that if you look at college admission rates over the last 40 years, they have dropped by 20% for Black males. Mm. And it's connected to this set of drug laws. And so that's all to say, what I've learned is, you know, when my friend says she's afraid for her son, she is afraid that maybe something like what happened to George Floyd would happen to him. But that actually is rare. What is much more likely to happen is that a Black male will be arrested for marijuana use or a drug crime and end up in the system that will ruin him, his family, and his community for life. And it's a huge issue before us.
Wow. Wow. So Ron, would you just help us think through this as ordinary Christians? So knowing that there is this, well, what you've described is an issue with the system. Knowing that that's the case, what does an ordinary Christian think about this? How does an ordinary Christian respond to this? And what can an ordinary Christian do about this?
What's important is that it's a very tangible thing. It is something that we can do. Those drug laws are codified. There is significant work being done to change them, and we should be a part of that. 66% of poor Black children don't have fathers. We can do something about that. Give resources to the Innocence Project. Blacks are much more likely to be convicted of crimes they didn't commit than whites. The reason this is so important is, you know, there's all these arguments online about, you know, who, you know, what racial crime did your grandfather commit? That's all well and good. But right now, let's, as Christians, Republican, Democrat, we can join together and deal with this. This ought to be a justice issue that we can all get behind. And we can, if together, we could pressure our political system to make changes rather quickly.
Do you think that the drug laws in particular are the things that a Christian ought to sort of address politically? And that's just tell me more about that. So it's the drug law specifically.
I think that's a great place to start. It isn't working. And so we're criminalizing drugs. We're getting inordinately the wrong population, and it's not helping anyone. And so we need to decriminalize it and move it into the world of rehabilitation. And the research shows if you catch a young person with rehabilitation early on, they have a much higher potential to break out of it. And so let's do that. I mean, incarcerating all of these Black men is destroying our society. So the alternative is let's invest into these young men when they're young and then find ways of helping them if they get caught up into the drug world.
So decriminalizing all drugs or some drugs, what's the best way to approach that?
This is what will get me fired later. I think they should be decriminalized only because, so you take cocaine or crack, for example, it doesn't mean that you wouldn't get some kind of ticket for it or whatever, but putting someone in prison for 10 years for crack use, where's the benefit to society if his family is left without a father? Those kids now grow up in the same world he lived in with no options, and you are just reliving the cycle again. It doesn't work. And so whatever you must do to get them into a rehabilitation process. What do you think, Bob?
Bob, would you speak into this?
Go ahead, Derek.
No, I want to hear from you, Bob. I'm excited to hear what you have to say about this.
The original question was, what have we learned kind of post George Floyd trial? I mean, there's a couple things that went through my mind. Number one, I really like the peace that it's brought to our country, at least right now. This week has been a peaceful week. It could have been incredibly disruptive, but I sense it. Now, the second thing I want to say about that is we've only just begun to say, oh, now everything's going to be, all the racial tension, all the trouble's going to be gone. It's not true. We have an ongoing process of a nation to heal the brokenness of racism, et cetera. The last one, Derek, that I would say that just to start my thought is I try to live my life and this is the influence of John Calvin, to be honest with you, of all the reading, he lived his life in moderation, balance. He was always looking at the balance, at least that what I've read and I've taken on. And so when I look at issues of race,
true.
I look
so
at...
One of the things that Calvin urged was moderation. That was a big,
yes.
big...
And I even go at it... Writing. So like Ron nailed it with talking about the issues of the black man and the judicial system, et cetera. The other balance end is the police officers. And I have a heart for police officers because I was a police chaplain and I'm actively involved in the police department here in Dyer, Indiana. And to be honest with you, all the years of being a police chaplain and all the reactions, the vast majority of police officers are amazing. And I cannot say that enough. Mm-hmm. Believe me, I can speak with authority. The vast majority of police officers been involved in several departments from, I was police chaplain in New Jersey, South Holland, Illinois, and now in great relationship with the Dyer police. Phenomenal. Don't forget that. The second thing is a couple weeks ago, a number of departments in the area, one young police officer said, hey, let's get the police together for whether we know our Christians for a Bible study. A topical Bible study. Bob, would you lead? He was expecting 5 police officers. 14 showed up. It was one of the highlights of my recent life. Here's what I did. I asked the question. I want you to ponder, 14 police officers in the room here. I said, what is your number one fear? I was expecting them to say, being ambushed, sitting in a parking lot of a grocery store in the middle of the night, being shot. Their number one, the first person off the bat said, my greatest fear, going to jail for the rest of my life for being a good cop. I went, and the room erupted with a kind of like, yes, 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 yes. And then all of a sudden the fear started coming out of and they opened up like flowers. It was beautiful. And then the question of how do you address fear from God's word? So the other extreme, yes, we have black male justice issues. We also have justice in terms of the reality is police officers are good people, men and women of great value and morality and ethics. There are bad police officers and we have a national problem. We got to get rid of them. We may have to change procedures. We may have to do looking at everything. But the truth is, don't forget, the vast majority of cops that are involved in this country actually have really came out of a sense of honor. Go ahead.
Yeah, Ron, you have something.
One of the things that's really important here is that culturally speaking, we're aiming at the wrong villain, per se. The police aren't, you know, the police ought to be more trained. They ought to get more funding, not less.
Yes.
They need other, you know, resources, mental health, you know, for both the community and themselves, all that stuff. But the laws are the laws. And so the laws move the police into action. And so they're just simply following what the law entails. And so the issue structurally is the system itself in which they are just a part of. And so they really ought to be commended. I can't imagine the world in which they live, in which now everything is videoed and, you know, second guessed. And so, but they're not the ones who are the problem here, in my opinion.
I'm going to turn things over to Bob in just a second, but I think that what you're saying is something that's really important for people to note. And I think that that's the hardest part to parse out about all of this. So when there are bad laws that the police are duty bound to honor the law, what the law says. And sometimes police officers will respond in a way that people despise because they're duty bound to enforce the law. And the issue is the law that they're called to enforce, not the police officer who is being made to enforce that. Bob, what were you going to say?
Yeah, going back to ordinary. Okay, so the ordinary Christian, what should we do? And here's this topic, my last thought, and I mean it with all my heart. It's a practice I've made, and I would ask ordinary Christians that are listening to practice with me. Every time you see a police car, pray for that police officer. I'm a runner. And Derek, welcome to the running world.
Thanks
every time you're running and you go past and every time you're running and you run across the parking lot and you see a police officer, may the Holy Spirit remind you, pray for that police officer. Pray for when you're riding on the road and you see them at the ramp, you know, with their radar out. Instead of getting mad, why don't you pray? Because the truth is they need prayers. Like Ron said, who'd want to be a police officer right now? It's such a scary world because they're caught. They want to be fine, upstanding police officers in a world that is communicating basically that they're always wrong and they're always out to hurt people. And I think the same way we need to pray for justice in the prison system, judicial system. I'm a forever optimist, so I have a lot of hope. I think coming out of George Floyd is going to be a new justice system. I think all police departments are looking at procedures, and I think ultimately, I think there's good coming. That's my summary.
Before we conclude this little segment here, what does an ordinary Christian do with a guilty, guilty, guilty verdict for George Floyd, for Derek Chauvin in the George Floyd case? Does a Christian rejoice in that? I mean, some of it is social media. What it is that I've seen on social media, and it seems as though the vast majority of people that I've been seeing have been rejoicing. There have been some who have been decrying it as a miscarriage of justice or mob violence or those sorts of things. Like, how does a Christian respond to this verdict?
Yeah, you know, the wisest among us look at the actions of individuals and we seek to find the principle underneath it. And there are a couple big things happening. One is that Derek Chauvin did a grotesque thing. There's just no decent human being can say, boy, that was the best use of his knee. But you have to ask yourself, in what world is it possible that he exists? And what we have to know is that the police departments need spaces for mental health and to help these guys who really see the worst parts of society day in and day out. One can only imagine what that does to your soul over decades. And Chauvin 20 or 15 years ago have been helped in such a way that his anger and his bitterness didn't take his heart? I think so. And so that's the first kind of principle going on, that we see that he's just a very ordinary man who was overcome by his own brokenness and the brokenness of the world. The second thing is there is a sense of relief in the African-American community that finally a police person has been brought to justice who did wrong. And I think there is reason to stand with them in that. It was beautiful how even the police department, the chief, the other detectives, they all said, this is too far, too wrong. And we stand with the victim. And I just think that is a huge culture shift that the African-American community desired. And in that, we ought to rejoice that God has brought some kind of good out of this that I think will be, like Bob says, a shift in our world.
I think Christians also need to respect the system of justice that exists within the country. And when there is a trial that's heard by a jury of peers, and they're tasked with hearing the evidence and rendering a verdict, and this verdict is guilty. And the thing is that we should not either have the mob call for a guilty verdict apart from the system of justice hearing all of it. We should also not have a mob that can just declare him innocent by virtue of their participation in a mob. We can't have mob guilt or mob innocence depending on the will of one group of people. I mean, the reason that we have a judicial system that's set up like it is so that there can be this kind of justice that's done. And so when we hear that, when we hear a guilty, guilty, guilty verdict that comes from the jury, I think that we should be grateful for the fact that, and one of the ways that I've been trying to deal with this as an ordinary Christian is that up until I heard what it is that the jury rendered, I've been saying George Floyd, the person who killed George Floyd. Now that we have a jury who has made a determination, I can say the person who murdered George Floyd, because that's not my determination as somebody who's a private citizen. That is the determination of the court that this person is guilty of murder. And so I think that that is one of the ways that we can think through that and operate along with that. Bob, what do you have to say about all that?
Yeah, my last thought is, and we got to wrap up, I know that, but my last thought is we still need to call out sin. You know, I mean, whether it's the police side or the mob side, I mean, I'm really upset right now that I heard this morning in the news that there is a George Floyd zone up in Minneapolis now where cops cannot enter and it's anarchy and it's evil and it's sinful. And I want white and black and brown Christians to call out sinfulness as well. Let's don't allow George Floyd death and murder to be the justification for all kinds of sin, especially Christians. We need to respond with humility, thinking through biblically everything and how we respond to racism, to the George Floyd. And now, obviously, there's more cases that have come up this week. But that's so humility and thinking, what I would urge ordinary Christians to do.
Humility and thinking. Appreciate that. Thank you all for joining us for this season 2 of Ordinary Christians. God bless you.
God bless you guys.
Peace out.